This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, and welcome back to the New Books Network. I'm your host, Jacob Barrett, and today I have the pleasure to be talking with Cooper Minister and Sarah Blesch about their new textbook, Cultural Approaches to Studying Religion, An Introduction to Theories and Methods, that was just published in December 2023 with Bloomsbury Publishing. Cooper and Sarah, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having us.
So for those listening who are unfamiliar, can you give a little overview? What is this book? How is it structured? What do you hope it offers? Give kind of like an intro for people who haven't been lucky to hear about it yet.
It's a book that introduces several different theorists to people studying religion. And so we hope that the theorists are introduced in a way that is accessible to people for the study of religion. And several of the theorists actually offer theories of religion, but there are many theorists that are just used a lot in the study of religion that are also introduced in this textbook. And so I'll let Sarah say a little bit about how we came to the decision of the theorists that we chose and a little bit of the background of why it's structured that way.
Yeah, thank you. Cooper and I had both been teaching. We were early-ish in our careers when we were plotting the first edition. This is the second edition. And we were having trouble finding accessible resources for introductions to theorists who had been really influential in religious studies outside of the traditional canon. There are many, many introduction to theory and method texts out there. And we spent a lot of time looking at a lot of them. And so this really was sort of born out of our desire to have accessible resources for people that we were reading and thinking with and using, and that our colleagues, people that we were reading. So we wanted those theorists to be accessible in the classroom.
Because we felt like the theorists, mm-hmm. that there were some accessible introductions to some theorists that the old canon, like Daniel Powles's book was an inspiration for this. And so Daniel Powles had, I think at the time we were using it, 8, and now there's 11 maybe, theorists of religion that have been introduced as that book has gone through different editions. And well, we wanted something different. We wanted to be introducing different theorists in our courses. And so that's where this book came from.
Yeah. And I think I'm really excited by this book as I'm nearing the end of my coursework in my PhD program and thinking, you know, towards courses that I'll teach. Eventually, when I saw the book, I thought it was such a strong structure for kind of an intro to religious studies textbook, because it avoids kind of what you said, what I feel like oftentimes is such a slog through a traditional canon. And it brings some really exciting voices to the table. So I'm excited to see it out and hopefully to be able to teach with it in the future. You mentioned that this version of the book that came out in December of 2023 is the second edition of the book. How what's different about the second edition? And then I guess I'm interested in how the second edition came to be. You know, you said that the first edition came out of kind of some frustration or noticing of not necessarily the intro textbook that you would want. And so what prompted you to do a second edition of the book, and what's different about it?
I'll say for one brief moment some of the pieces that actually carry forth from the first to the second edition, and then I'll let Cooper take it away for differences and additions, and then we'll go from there. So one of the a couple of the repeating things from the first edition to the second is that each of the chapters has a repeating structure, and that repeats across each chapter, so that sort of brings some coherence across this wide range of theorists and theoretical perspectives that we're bringing in. We also have the book divided into sort of three parts that help make a little bit more coherence among the theorists. So, right, providing a little even further structure with that, and all of that stays the same from the first to the second edition, which I think makes it much more like continues to be accessible and usable in thinking through these larger movements, but also the structure of how there are similarities across. Cooper.
We were super excited to be able to put out a second edition because the first edition came out, and you've had this experience where you're like, oh, there are things that we could do that could improve this. And so with some of the changes in the second edition, all of those sections that Sarah was just mentioning, the three sections, we wrote introductions for each one of the sections to better help those theorists in those sections cohere. And then I think we also introduced some key terms for each of those sections. And so that's an addition for the second edition. And then the other addition, we added two chapters for two theorists that we wanted to introduce that weren't in the first edition. Then the new one has an additional chapter on Jomoku Matsuzawa and another one on Jasbir Puar. And so those were two theorists not in the first edition that are in the second edition. And we had such a hard time choosing theorists the first time around. It may have been even harder the second time around choosing who to add because there were so many possibilities. And we're excited about the additions and hope that they offer further clarification that we weren't able to do in the first edition.
And one of the things that I really appreciate about this book is that the range of theorists that you bring in and discuss, it's a really diverse set of social theorists from various disciplines and areas of study. You know, one of the things that I feel like I'm always yelling at peers is like, they don't have to be working directly on religion to be relevant to religious studies. There's so many social theorists and work of social theory that's importable and relevant and important to a religious studies framework. And so I wanted to know how the decisions about who to include came about. How did you decide that? And why was it important to you to include both those theorists that religious studies scholars would be familiar with? Like you mentioned Tomoko Masuzawa, or I was thinking Sabo Mahmood is in the book, but also theorists that religious studies scholars might be a little less familiar with, like you mentioned Jasbir Puar, Gloria Anzaldúa, some of the other theorists that might not initially hit as theorists relevant to religious studies. Why was it important to do both?
Yeah, I'll just jump in here and say that we're using theorists from other disciplines, in part just being continued to be inspired by that canon, because that's what religious studies has always done. And so we've always been a really interdisciplinary field. It's really important for us to be introducing theorists from many different fields because in order to study religion, you have to be looking at it from a lot of different aspects. And so that's because in part because of the historical canon. With regards to people that contemporary scholars of religion are more or less familiar with, we wanted to include both because even people who are re contemporary religious studies scholars, they're doing important work, but then there are a lot of people that are used over and over and over. Like some of the names that you just mentioned, there's been a lot of religious studies scholars working with Jasbir Puar, working with Gloria Anzaldúa. And so we wanted to include those people as well because we thought that it was important not only to look at people like contemporary scholars of religion, but people that contemporary scholars of religion seem to be using consistently in their work.
Sarah? Excellent.
Yeah.
Great. Yes. Yes to all of that. Yes. We had shorthanded it to ourselves, and we talk about this in the introduction a little bit, the difference between theories of religion and theories for religion, and thinking of this distinction that is, it's one small word and yet seems to create such a big difference. So, right, some of these theorists that one would expect, right, what we would call theorists of religion. So trying to like figure out how to put your arms around this ever-shifting thing we call religion in religious studies. And not exclusively, but many of the sort of theorists in the earlier part of the book fall into that category. But then we have the theories for religion. And this is precisely what Cooper was talking about, of these are theorists who are being used by religious studies scholars to theorize this thing that we sometimes and usually call religion, whatever that might look like. And so we felt that that was really important to include them, because each of these theorists in the text that we selected have long lineages of people who have been working with them for a long time, right? They have grad students, they have, you know, at least one, possibly several generations of scholars who have been actively using their theories. And so bringing that all together was a further part of the mix.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that this textbook does differently than other textbooks, we've talked about how it presents a different canon, a more diverse, both disciplinarily and in terms of identity. It's a very diverse canon, which is really great to see. But I think one of the other things that this book does differently than other kind of introduction to religious studies textbooks is it has many different contributors and functions like an edited volume almost, where there's lots of these contributors next to each other thinking with these theorists. How, I guess my question would be, why was it important to you as editors to not sit down and say, okay, we're going to write a textbook from start to finish and write all of the essays, but to bring in contemporary religious studies scholars to produce and write these essays and the chapters, you know, on a theorist that they were assigned or that they picked. Why was that important to you, and how did that process kind of shake out?
Really short, quick answer is that we wanted it faster than we could write it ourselves. We knew that it would take a lot of work for us to write each of these chapters ourselves in the way that we wanted them to be written, and we wanted the resource faster than we could do that. So we asked other people to do it. And then, but then because edited volumes get unwieldy, we had people use that familiar repeating structure that Sarah was talking about earlier to make sure that the chapters had coherence across them so that they could continue to be followed coherently throughout the volume as a whole.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead, Sarah.
I was just gonna add that when we first started working, when we first conceptualized and started proposing the book, Cooper and I were both just a couple, like, I think I was a year out of grad school and Cooper was two, three, thereabouts. Yeah, somewhere around there. We were extremely junior scholars. And so bringing in folks who had from a range of, from junior scholars to senior scholars, having those voices were also important for other reasons as well, in addition to time and speed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thinking about the different chapters that were all contributed, were there any chapters that stick out to you as particularly exciting as you were editing and assembling this? And did any of them, I mean, I'm sure I've read them and they are all wonderful, but were there any that surprised you or helped you thought about something differently that you might not have before?
I'll let Sarah go first in case we want to say the same one, and then I'll add another one. If you want.
I was going to,
no pressure. No,
I was going to play it. I was going to play it cool and say, that's like asking a parent to choose their favorite child. That is un, undoable.
Oh, I can no. I mean, for okay, whatever. I'm gonna do this. They're all, but I appreciate that you're saying that first because you're absolutely right. They're all great, and yes, quite fair. But yeah, no, you connect with things differently. We're human beings, so I'm gonna name one or two.
Do
Do it
it.
if you want to go first.
Oh, well, I can't go first. I mean, I co-authored in for the second edition the Judith Butler chapter. So I clearly feel a lot of connection and excitement about that. That was a wonderful opportunity to sort of take what had been in the first and continue to think with it and work, right, co-authoring to turn it into what was then in the second edition. So I will start with that and let Cooper go from there.
I feel like that was also a I see what you're doing there. Okay, well, here I go. I'm going to say Joseph Winter's chapter on Gloria Ansel Dua really I hesitate to say systematized, but systematized her thought for me in a way that I found really helpful, and the way that he talks about trauma and wounding was really meaningful for me in the moment that I was in whenever we were working on the book and receiving the chapters. And so that chapter really was I really loved that chapter. And then the other one that I'll say is Katie Lofton's chapter on Mary Douglas. And again, that's because it connects with my own work. I have some work on rape culture and sexual violence, and I've thought a lot with Mary Douglas and purity. And so I just really appreciated that chapter. And again, I think offered a lot with regards to like being really helping get really clear about what Douglas is saying, and the commentary on it was just so insightful. So again, all of the chapters are great, but those chapters really resonated with me because of where I was in my own life and because of my own work. And so I do really like those chapters.
All right, I will add one further piece to this. In the second edition, with the Cooper and I had already decided ahead of time that the Matsuzawa chapter was going to go at the end of the first part. We thought that that would be a really appropriate and important cap, and so we had expected that to work.
Can I jump in? Because that's on comparing approaches, and that approach is and there's something, right? Is that okay for me to
Right.
jump in about why?
That's
Yeah.
great. The first part one is comparative approaches. And so, right after Mary Douglas, Phyllis Trible, Wendy Doniger, Catherine Bell, then having Matsuzawa's chapter serve as that cap, did we had imagined and were delighted to see do really important work. But what surprised me was also how intensely it's sort of foretended, foretold, was prescient, connected to, I'm not sure, the part two and part three. So part two is, let me tell you, examining particularities, and part three is expanding boundaries. So right in the Matsuzawa chapter, it's starting to, like, it talks about themes that get picked up later in the text. So secularism, ways of needing to be, right, attentive to very particular and specific spaces and communities. So I thought that was really lovely. And that was surprising to me how it didn't just serve as a cap, but sort of also served as a jumping off.
Yeah, I agree with that. That was a really pleasant surprise.
I it's funny. All of the chapters that you named were ones that I think if I had to answer the question, I would answer. They're all like, they all are lovely and they all do really important work. But yeah, I mean, the Judith Butler chapter of Sarah, we've chatted in pieces about this, but Judith Butler was kind of the first theorist in my own work when I was doing work earlier that wasn't directly working on religion, but that like helped me as a young student think, be like, oh, what can I take from Judith Butler's work and think about religion in this way? And what does that tell me about it? And so it was fun to see a chapter about her or about them and their work in a textbook for a kind of introduction to religious studies course. And kind of on that same note, I think the book is obviously a textbook geared towards kind of this introductory level course. It's written and organized, I think, really well with teaching in mind and with the classroom in mind. And so my question for you is, if you have or if you haven't, how would you speculate, like, how would you teach this textbook in an introductory to, or an introduction to religious studies course, or like a theories and method course? Are there any examples of assignments or activity ideas that have worked well or that you've thought about that might work well? I guess it was clear to me reading through it that a lot of thought had gone into how this textbook should be taught and with students in mind. And I really wanted to ask for your thoughts on that, because I think that's important.
One of the first things that comes to mind is the discussion questions, but those are actually in the reader. And we thought a lot about those and used questions and developed them based on questions that we had in our classes. And those are in the reader, and there's not a second edition of the reader, but those questions I still would really recommend as a good jumping off point for thinking about how to teach some of these texts in a class. The other thing that I would say about teaching these texts teaching the second edition in particular, is that I would pair it with some of the more let's say traditional canon sorts of people, but in different ways. And one of my favorite ways that I've heard about a colleague doing that is she puts all of the people, say, like in the Powell's edition, into a hat and sends it around the room, and everyone pulls someone out, and then they all do presentations, and it's one day, I think, as I remember this. And so it's like one day you get through all of those theorists, and then you get to spend the majority of the semester on these people that I think really are doing much more exciting work for the contemporary study of religion. And so that's one way of thinking about how to incorporate those people, because they influence the people in this volume. We can't just leave them behind entirely. And so I do think that that's important when thinking about how to teach this volume, to figure out how to include that. Other people would use like Powell's and this book in the same semester if you want more equal, space for these. But I'm more inclined to that first approach. Sarah, thoughts?
I mean, this is not related to teaching, I will get to that in a second, but we did in the textbook work to include in the mini intros, like to point to and point out those lineages of, oh, right, this person was a student of this person that we talk about in the canon all of the time, and it's very serious, and we always read him, but we never read her, for example. So we did a little bit of that work of, right, showing that this didn't just come out of thin air, that all of this work is grounded within these broader conversations. But as for teaching, it's an interesting, I'm going to take a slightly different route to answering that question, to talk about maybe types of mm-hmm. classrooms, or ways it could be used outside of the classroom. So we were trying to walk a fine line as we were working on this of, is this for undergrads? Is this for graduate students? Is this for instructors? And the answer we hoped was yes, depending on the different contexts and ways. And so this can be, really, I think, helpful and powerful as for undergrad, as the introduction in grad level classes, right, paired with more with the primary sources, with, right, multiple competing things, but also for instructors, even if you are not necessarily teaching the book, to have this introduction to like a quick 20 page, oh, okay, let me just sort of get a slightly better grasp on, right, the huge corpus of any of these theorists, because they all have such huge corpuses of work that this also can be, a tool for prepping for class.
Sarah and I had an instructor in grad school who told, because we went to grad school together, that was how we met. And so we had an instructor who talked about the resources that you didn't assign to students, but you kept behind and you used in order to prep for class without assigning those resources to students. And I think we both carried that with us and thinking about our own mm-hmm. teaching. And this is definitely, I think that's a great point, Sarah, one of those resources that even if you're not assigning it, you might use in your teaching.
Yeah, and I think that's really important and shines through in the book, you know, as I was working through it, and it helped click for me, you know, like it helped click some people's ideas into place for me and helped me really get a grasp of people in these really nice kind of contextualized summaries of their work and their contributions. It was helpful. People I've read, but maybe not totally comprehended, or people that I've spent a lot of time with and think that I knew, but then here's kind of a summary of their ideas next to each other and help show different things. So yeah, I think that's really clear in the as I was reading through and was really important to the book. Yeah, well, thank you both for being here and talking about this book with me. I'm, as I've said, I'm very excited about this book, and I think it's such an asset to the classroom and to instructors. So I hope, and it's exciting that there's a second edition to keep on going. Fingers crossed, I'll look for a third edition in a few years. well, we'll wrap it up there, but thank you both for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having us. This has been fun.
Thank you. It was lovely. Yes.